Twitter.com/NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up on the first half of today's show, another in our series of interviews with the people running for mayor of Tampa. Today, we'll have Ed Taranchik. But first, four listener comments about yesterday's program. On the program, we spent part of the show talking about the Green New Deal, which has the backing of newly elected New York State Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here's what four listeners had to say following yesterday's show.
It's John from Lutz. Hey, I think you were really on to something with that mentioning to the one caller that we, the average American, are the ones who are creating the jobs because we're the ones who are doing all the buying here locally and domestically versus this Republican idea of supporting the ultra-rich. I think we could really change our country, and I really encourage you to keep reinforcing that idea over and over again as much as you can, because I think the Republican idea of supporting the ultra-rich billionaire one percenters is just a failed concept, and we really need to keep focusing. It is we Americans, the average Americans, who are creating the jobs. We need to change the tax code, as Ms. Ocasio-Cortez says. We need to bring back more higher percentage taxing of the ultra-rich the way we did during the boom time prosperity after World War II. So great job, Rob. Keep it up.
Pete, I was just listening to the show today of your folks on the roundtable, that show that you have on PBS. And, you know, people have to understand, when they hear that phrase, progressive, it's always associated with the radical left, the socialists. Understand, if people study American history, from FDR to LBJ, the Democratic Party stood for the things that Bernie Sanders and the progressives stand for today. It's not radical. It's not left-wing. It's not crazy.
Hello, this is Benjamin. We have no choice but to protect the environment. This is imperative, and cost is not part of the equation.
Prasco. The New York Congresswoman response on 60 Minutes was great. Though I still reserve judgment on her, the Honorable Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez reminded listeners that Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt advanced progressive measures that were radical, advancing civil liberties and economic justice. Conservatives like to tar and feather anyone as radical who wants a moral government that serves the people. If conservatives consider themselves moral, why is it then that libertarians and Republicans of the Freedom Caucus and of the Senate aggressively pursue policies to cripple public education and to deny affordable health care, programs that benefit all Americans?
Well, there are some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, first up today, on March 5th, voters in Tampa will go to the polls for what's likely to be the first round of voting for a new mayor. As of now, there are seven candidates in the race. We've been interviewing the candidates for mayor. So far, David Straz, Harry Cohen, and Topher Morrison have already been on this program. And today we're joined by Ed Taranchik. He's an attorney and a former Hillsborough County Commissioner, and he's one of the candidates for Tampa mayor. Ed Taranchik, welcome back to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Always nice to be here on MNF, Rob, and been a fan for a long time.
So tell me why you want to be the next mayor of Tampa.
Andrew Gillum said when he was running for governor, he wanted to bring it home. When I gave my kickoff speech, I used that expression. I've been at this for 30 years to build a community that's sustainable, that's got good transit, affordable housing, that protects the environment. I have a record that people really know well. I have been at this. I haven't switched parties to run. I haven't switched positions on major issues. I want to realize the work we started and the movement we started 30 years ago and bring it home so we have the kind of community works in the 21st century.
Now, you're known as a transportation guy. Yesterday, you came out with your transportation plan for the city of Tampa. What is your plan for transportation in the city of Tampa?
Well, it's called the GO plan. And it is a robust, complete transportation plan that serves all of our neighborhoods. I think people need to understand for the last 20 years, we have been on the wrong track. We have been pushing and chasing projects that consultants and lobbyists and special interests have pushed out there that are multi-billion dollar transportation or transit projects that don't meet the needs of the community. We start from the very simple proposition that we need to provide transit that connects people from where they live to where they work, play, go to school, and get medical care. It needs to be congestion-proof for it to work. It needs to be serve these local communities. It needs to be affordable because we have to have a system, not a line. And it's got to use the best fit technology. And all of this comes together in a robust GO plan that gets us around congestion and creates a transportation system we can grow on. People will know some of these elements, Port Tampa to New Tampa using the CSX line, which I introduced in 1991. We ran a train on it. Rob, you rode that for a month.
Yeah, I rode it from Hyde Park into downtown Tampa during the art show, the February art show.
We ran that train for a month, 21 years ago. It was obvious, it was practical, and then a generation of elected officials and local officials turned their back on the practical and affordable and pursued the impractical and expensive. Why would we do that? And it's really because I think people don't have the vision and don't understand it. And they turned this over to consultants and lobbyists, and we have been stuck in traffic since. So I call this the green line because it would be a almost 30-mile congestion-proof transit corridor that would have bikeways, sidewalks, rail, in the New Tampa area, next generation transit, and in South Tampa solve stormwater problems. We create a new tramway from downtown to West Shore and the airport. We create another dedicated transit corridor running from downtown on the Florida-Tampa pairs through the Heights up to USF. Yet another line serving, I call it the health line, connecting to St. Joe's and Tampa General. Why haven't we been talking about connecting to these incredible employment centers that need to connect to neighborhoods, to their workforce, and connect to people that need health care? Hmm. We also use a robust water transit system, 63 miles. So it's a complete system, and that's what we need, a system that we can build. And fortunately, the taxpayers were willing to approve a $15 billion tax. And they did so on a hope and a wing and a prayer because there was no plan behind it. And I was not in favor of that because I never have believed you tax first and spend later. You put your plan out there and say, here's what we're going to do with your money. But taxpayers did that, which is a great credit to them. They're so frustrated. This plan is meant to give fulfillment to their expectations.
Now that sales tax for transportation is passed, how much would your plan cost, and how much of the revenue from the sales tax would go toward your plan?
Well, the city portion would be used for sidewalks, greenway trails portion. The answer is, I don't know that yet. I do know, however, that it's a fraction of the cost of other systems proposed. The rail piece is under $10 million per mile, not including right-of-way. Contrast that with light rail, which is between $100 billion per mile, and in some places, $300 billion per mile. So we know by comparison, this is far more affordable. But what will drive the plan will be stations, station designs, and that's really a community process. My desire is to not have these big parking lots that is called for in the BRT plan that Jane Castor supports that are just in crazy intrusive things. It's to have walk-up stations, kiss-and-ride stations, using all the new mobility options to get to a GO corridor. And they're called GO corridors because once you get to them, you go. You're not stuck in traffic, and you can get to either your destination or another line that gets you to your destination. And that's the important thing. We need to create a complete transportation system. But I know that it will be easily covered with the revenues passed by the voters because it's such so much money. This is all very affordable stuff because it uses existing streets and railroad rights of way and waterways. So the biggest cost of this is right away.
We're talking with Ed Taranchik, who's running for mayor of Tampa, and this is WIMNF in Tampa. When you say a tramway, what do you mean? What is a tramway?
Well, you know, there's this incredible new technology coming out of China. If you looked at this, you would say this new technology, and you'll be able to see it on the website, tampa2020.com, that's getting stood up tomorrow. It would look like a light rail vehicle, but it's not. And it's autonomous. It can run on a 14-foot ribbon of asphalt, which means it's cheap to lay down. It runs on it doesn't deviate more than a centimeter on its in its pathway. And you could literally put enough frequency. Each tram holds 250 people. So you could push through a roadway corridor, 5,000 people per hour, whereas cars can only move 2,000 people per hour. So we can take our existing streets like Tampa and like Florida, layer down a right-of-way for this new technology, include within a bikeway. And that's why this plan can create 44 miles of dedicated congestion-proof transit and bikeways, all new in Tampa, connecting all the great places. And it's just revolutionary. And, you know, people should expect big things from me. I mean, I've always looked down the road. I've never looked through the rearview mirror. And I think we've suffered because we've not had mayors that have taken the long view of things. You know, that St. Petersburg is moving forward on the green initiatives, and Tampa has been greenwashing for 15 years. I mean, 15 years ago, I was building green homes in West Tampa, affordable homes where the electric bill was $50 a month. And we can do these things. It just needs visionary leadership.
Well, when you say congestion-proof, though, one of the problems with any sort of at-grade rail system is that you're going to cross over roads, heavily traveled roads. Even the CSX lines go over heavily traveled roads. That's going to slow down the traffic as the train goes by. And the train isn't going to have to go slow as it goes through heavy traffic areas, right?
The technology solves that easily. You do synchronized lights, and it's really not an issue. All over the world, they do this. And then you have the Go app that combines all these things. So you can't go above grade because the prices become so astronomical that you can no longer create a system. And the reason you need a system is we live everywhere, we go everywhere, all at the same time. We're so dispersed that if you don't create a grid system, it won't work. And to create a grid system, you have to do it affordably. This is all a math problem at the end of the day.
What do you say to those people, and I hear from them all the time, that say that Tampa is not as congested as Boston, it's not as crowded, congested is the wrong word. We don't live close like people do in Boston, people do in San Francisco, lots of high rises, lots of, you know, multiple
sure.
family houses. And so we don't live that way here in Tampa, so therefore a train won't work.
Well, workability is defined by cost. If you build something that costs $1 billion, you better have a lot of riders. If you do the same thing for $200 million, the numbers work. And so we do have ample density and frequency. What we haven't had is practical, affordable options. Because, again, I said, we've had a generation of public officials that have turned their back on the affordable and the obvious to pursue the expensive and the impractical. It's time to just exercise some common sense. So the numbers on this are very attractive. You're in to between $5 million and $20 million per mile versus $100 to $150 million per mile. And you can the transit becomes far more efficient because it is true that things will stop at stations and at some lights, but you can provide single preemption and give transit that opportunity to move faster than cars. And that's a real key. because, and it needs to be local. People live in Seminole Heights, for instance. We can fashion transit that gets to USF in downtown pretty much the same speed of cars. But in downtown in USF, then you also have to find a parking spot. Then you have to go walk, whereas the transit can take you right to where you live. So this local live-work corridor emphasis with congestion-proof technology will make people want to take it. I call it the GO plan because we want to design it so people will just get up and go. Then, importantly, you build housing around it. Affordable housing gets retrofitted around it. I've built my share of affordable housing and know how you can exact from developers the requirement to build in affordable units in their transit-oriented higher density construction. It's all about building a city and building a future.
Where would the ferry system go?
The ferry system would run from South County to MacDill to downtown. It would run between downtown and St. Petersburg. As mayor, we are going to have frequent ferry service. Within 6 months after I'm elected, running from St. Pete to Tampa on evenings and weekends.
Regular service, regular 365 service. Days a year?
Yes, but it'll be focused on evenings and weekends where the market is.
Does that need a federal subsidy?
No, it does not.
Yeah.
And I'd try to avoid federal dollars wherever possible because it takes so long to get them. There's so many strings attached. The other piece is St. Petersburg to West Shore. Now, we can stand up a ferry route there for a fraction of the cost of this regional BRT that would carry more people and be in place in 2 years instead of 10 years. Practical, affordable, and obvious instead of impossible, impractical, and very expensive.
Ed Taranchik is here. He's running for mayor of Tampa. You know, one of the questions I have about the ferry is, would it actually take that many people off the road? No doubt about it that Bloomingdale and US 60 and 75 in the East County crowded all times of day, 301s sure. crowded all times of day. And we would all benefit if there was less traffic right. on those roads. A lot of that traffic, as you say, goes from South County to MacDill,
right.
people working on the base. But would you really take that many people off the road?
Well, it's a 15-minute ferry ride across the bay,
mm-hmm.
and it's an hour over the top. There's 8,000 people in South County that work at the base. I kind of think that, you know, the principle of the GO plan is provide transit that is more competitive than cars, because I trust people, their judgment. They're going to do what's simple and easy, so the ridership studies, et cetera, show that people will do that. So you take people, you know, there's two ways to create capacity, right? You build more, which is billions of dollars, or you take people off the road with less expensive options. And the ferry, the ferries would do that.
Would environmentally sensitive land be impacted on the eastern shore of Tampa Bay by the ferry dock?
Well, the county's undertaking a study right now looking at three different sites. I know there's been, people have tried to make an environmental issue of using the Schultz Preserve. The Schultz Preserve is a peninsula that did not exist till 1970. It was built by human beings.
It's dredge material from the bay?
Dredge. I made the motion to buy that in 1995. It was restored, so to speak, restoration would mean turning it back into bay bottom, by the way. But a portion of it was all scraped clean 13 years ago, and a portion of it was turned into wetlands. The portion that's proposed for a ferry terminal has not been restored. The ferry terminal would be next to a 100-foot tall or 75-foot tall heap of sulfur perlite. There's another black ash that's blowing over it, and it's next to a double track freight line. This is, when you stand there, you would think that you were in the flats of Cleveland, Ohio, not in any environmental area. So it's kind of overblown. I'm an evolutionary biologist. I'm the former growth management chair of the Sierra Club Florida chapter and the conservation chair of the local Tampa Bay group. We had a saying, when you think globally and act locally, and don't be an environmental NIMBY. There are some things you should do that make such good sense for the environment, for how we grow, that don't let a minor environmental issue prevent you from doing major environmental good. And we just need to learn that. I mean, we have become a society where we've become a soundbite society. You know, we've got to go to sound policy and get real with facts and numbers and speak plain to people.
Hmm. Ed Taranchik is here. He's running for mayor of Tampa. So I want to move just slightly off. Sure. You're an environmentalist. I think you've established that, a transportation guy. One more question about the environment, global warming.
Yeah.
How much do you think the city of Tampa in the next several years is going to be affected by rising sea levels? And what would you do to protect the city from rising sea levels?
Well, first of all, we need to do our part by shifting to a green economy. The GO plan, a transit plan, all the vehicles in there are electric, powered by solar solar energy sources, and shifting our land use pattern. We need to go green. We need to shift our, you know, encourage green building. We need to be vigorous. And think about Tampa having a mayor who's also an evolutionary biologist who knows the science, right? I will never say I don't know the science. I do know the science. But it's worrisome. This is an existential threat for our city. I am very excited about the notion of renewables, the price of them beating out fossil fuels. So I think we need to open the market for solar to take ascendancy over fossil fuels. And then we're going to have plans to deal with the very real prospect of, you know, 8 to 10 inches of sea level rise in the next 15 to 20 years.
The Vinnick project is being built right down there on the waterfront, the Water Street project, and all the projections are during a hurricane, that land, if it we get a direct hit, may be underwater. Is that a good use of our tax dollars to spend money on that infrastructure down there?
Oh, boy, that's a big one. I think that hope springs eternal on these kinds of things. I do believe we're going to turn the corner on global emissions. I'm discouraged by the most recent report that our CO2 emissions went up 3.5% this past year, despite cutting back on coal. But I, you know, I believe in the next 10 to 15 years, there's going to be a dramatic shift within our economy because solar and wind and battery costs are going to be lower than any fossil fuel option. And I think we've always, as human beings, beat back these things because of technology. The concern is that the fossil fuel interests are going to prevent the market from operating. And this is where there's a lot of synergy between free market people and conservatives and environmentalists saying, let's the market work. Let's not have the fossil fuel interests keep barriers from renewables coming in. And I think that if you let the marketplace work, that can result in a massive transition of the American society. You won't have to have a government-funded a green program. The marketplace will say, let's do it, because it's going to be cheaper for me to run my car, my house, my business off of solar than by plugging into a fossil fuel network.
Some neighborhoods in Tampa are becoming really unaffordable for people. Hyde Park, Palmacea, much of South Tampa is unaffordable. A lot of low and moderate income people have moved north and to the east. And as Seminole Heights is gentrified, a lot of people are no longer able to afford houses in Seminole Heights. What do you do for workforce housing? How do you as a mayor deal with that issue?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I have an aggressive housing strategy. It is a big, big issue. I have four priorities as mayor. A great transit system, building high-quality, affordable housing in and around that system, going to an innovation economy, and improving the quality of education of our urban schools. Those are the four stools on which you build a 21st century city. We don't use many tools in the affordable housing area. I've got a robust program dealing with buy and rehab older housing, making giving people who rent a lower monthly principal interest mortgage and interest or insurance payment than their rent. I want to reinforce the Sadowski Act Affordable Housing Trust Funds in Tallahassee. I also want to, in the connection of the GO zones, create transit-oriented housing and require as a condition for people building higher density units to have set-asides for low and low-income and workforce housing. I know that marketplace, and I know that will work as long as you do it prospectively. Then I would like to create a local local housing, affordable housing trust fund. Way back when in the Civitas program, Bill Bishop and I, in fact, did that.
And this was in West Tampa?
This was in for Central Park, Tampa Heights, and West Tampa. The Central Park redevelopment, that trust fund would be generating around $10 million a year of money that could be used to help underwrite or leverage the creation of affordable housing. We cannot displace low-income households by our prosperity, but we understand the market is the market, so we're going to have very strong government programs to create housing that the market isn't. I understand that. It's in my DNA. I'm the only guy in the race that's built affordable housing. I labored in Old West Tampa, which was 90% black, 60% below the poverty level. And I built 55 homes there. And we retrofitted homes of more than 30 residents because we wanted the residents to stay in the neighborhood. So you got to build communities completely and make sure there's room for everyone. And as a consequence of gentrification, we can't be chasing everyone out. We got to make sure there's room at the inn for all of us.
We're almost out of time, and we're talking with Ed Taranchik, who is one of the candidates running for mayor. He'll be on the ballot March 5th in the city of Tampa. Do you have a politician, either a current politician or a past politician, that you look up to that you'd like to emulate?
Oh, my. Off the top of my head, it's a great question. And I'm not at all suggesting this in any kind of that I could ever rise to the stature, but I like the way that Abraham Lincoln governed. He was a broad-based leader that brought people together from all sides, enemies and friends, and listened to them and had exercised independent judgment. I think that style of leadership is what we need. What he did was extraordinary, but I'm just talking about his style of working with people from everywhere to frame a consensus and a broad vision of what America should be. I'd like to do that for Tampa.
Last question, the current mayor, Bob Buckhorn, how different would you be from Bob Buckhorn?
Pretty different. I'm going to roll up my sleeves and be engaged in the trenches. I have a lot of substantive knowledge about housing and transit and city building, so I'm going to be more directly involved in those things and head of the team. You got to be the developer in chief and the city builder in chief, and you don't outsource that stuff. And I understand it. You know, it's in my DNA. The other thing is I'm going to really push an innovation economy and public-private partnerships. I want our employees with good ideas to come up and say, here's how you do it better, and reward them for doing that. And the private sector has better ideas. I want to hear that. My model is Tampa Bay Water, though. You identify the problem, you create a shared vision, and then you work it. We were at war with each other for 30 years. In a period of 3 years, we solved it. 198 people had to vote on the solution. 196 people did.
Pasco, Pinellas, St. Petersburg, Tampa.
The legislature, everyone. And I think that's what I would like to do with schools. I want to do with transit. I want to do with all these nagging problems of identify the problem instead of thinking it's foreordained. We know what it is, and we've like in transit, create the shared vision and work the problem with the solution so there's a consensus on how to get it together. And I think when Lincoln is president, from what I understood, you know, he would not always get the consensus, but he'd bring everyone to the table. And I think that's a helpful thing.
Yeah, that team of rivals. Ed Jurachik, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming by. If people want to get in touch with your campaign, what's the best way to get in touch with your campaign?
Thanks. Our website is very easy, ed4mayor, F-O-R, ed4mayor.com. And our phone number is 644-6572. And our office is located at 1920 on 7th Avenue in Ybor City. People might know it as Frankie's Patio years gone past. And we're open pretty much 14 hours a day. And come on down, hang out, and we have a good time there.
There are all these people predicting that somebody else is going to get in the mayor's race. Do you think anybody else is going to get in the mayor's race?
No, it's the qualifying's, a week from Friday. The votes come out. The first ballots drop in 20 days. It's practically impossible to do it at this point. I think the field will narrow down, and we'll have a good hoot and holler for the next 58 days, and it'll be a lot of fun. I think I'll remind voters about one thing. 8 years ago, Dick Greco was in this race. He had $500,000. He had the prohibitive front runner, and he finished third. There's going to be twists and turns in this that no one can account for. And so I think all bets are off in predicting who's going to be first and second till the horses come out of the starting blocks and you see us jostle around a little. That starts tomorrow night on Bay News 9. So tune in.
All right. That's the first televised debate. Ed Jurachik, thanks for coming by WMNF.
Thanks, Rob.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa.
I'm headed for the station with a pack on my back. Tired of transportation in the back of a hack. I just love the rhythm of the clickety-clack. And hear the whistle blowing, see the smoke from the stack. Tell around the Democrat fellas named Mac. Take me right back to the track, Jack. Choo-choo, choo-choo, choo-boogie, whoop-whoop. Boom, boom, chibooky, choo-choo, choo-choo, chibooky. Take me right back to the track, Jack. You reach your destination and the last in the lap. You need some conversation to the back of the black. You take a morning paper from the top of the stack and read the situation from the front to the back. The only job that's open needs a man with a knack. Take me right back to the track, Jack. Choo-choo, choo-choo, chibooky, whoop-whoop. Whoop-whoop, chibooky, choo-choo, choo-choo, chibooky. Take me right back to the track. I live a life of rolling in the beat down shack. When I hear the whistle like a piece of the crack, see the train a-rolling when it's falling the jack. But I just love the rhythm of the clickety-clack. Take me right back to the track, Jack. Choo-choo, choo-choo, chibooky, whoop-whoop. Whoop-whoop, chibooky, choo-choo, choo-choo, chibooky. Take me right back to the track, Jack.
Louis Jordan, Choo 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 Boogie. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a moment and take your phone calls. There's Louis again. Louis wanting to do another song. Well, let's talk about, we could talk about the Tampa mayor's race, but there are other issues, too, that we can talk about. President Trump is set to make his first Oval Office speech tonight as president to argue in prime time that there's a crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border, and it requires the wall he's demanding before ending the partial government shutdown. Trump's speech will be followed by a visit to the southern border tomorrow. His administration is at least talking about the idea of declaring a national emergency to allow him to move forward on the wall without congressional approval of the $5.6 billion that he wants Congress to approve. There are longer lines at security checkpoints and a reduction in safety inspections. Those are the early signs of how the partial government shutdown is affecting air travel. Security officers and air traffic controllers are working, but they're not getting paid right away. Over the weekend, some airports had long lines at checkpoints as TSA acknowledged an increase in absences. And there are also some news reports saying that the FAA has cut back on inspections of airplanes. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Well, on the eve of his inauguration, Ron DeSantis spent yesterday in the Capitol speaking about his vision for the state. And he talked to a crowd of mostly like-minded individuals in Tallahassee about his views of the Florida Supreme Court. The three liberal and moderates on the Supreme Court are stepping down because they've hit the mandatory retirement age. They are Barbara Perriente, Fred Lewis, and Peggy Quince. And they're part of a slight liberal majority on the court that has blocked some initiatives advanced by the Republican-led legislature. DeSantis said yesterday he expects to appoint his first new Supreme Court justice tomorrow. Here's what he said about the Florida Supreme Court.
The executive and the legislative branches in Florida have had a lot of frustration with that third branch of government, the judiciary, constantly usurping more and more legislative power over the years. Well, that ends tomorrow, and we will fix that.
That's Ron DeSantis, the incoming governor. We're going to have more about that on the afternoon news this afternoon at 3:30 with Sean Canaan. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And we can talk about these issues and anything else that's in the news. An amendment that allows eligible former felons to register to vote goes into effect today in Florida. Considered to be one of the most significant voting rights acts in state history, Amendment 4 passed last year with 64% of the vote statewide. Experts believe that the pool of those whose voting rights are being restored is at least 1.2 million people. We also have a report about that today at 3:30 on the MNF Afternoon News. California's largest power company was battered on Wall Street yesterday following reports it's considering filing for bankruptcy. In the face of potentially crippling liability lawsuits from a spate of wildfires, officials are investigating whether PG&E's equipment started the Camp Wildfire in Northern California that leveled the town of Paradise, killing at least 86 people and destroying about 15,000 homes. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. One of China's major cities has reached an environmental milestone, an almost entirely electric-powered taxi fleet. The high-tech hub of Shenzhen in southern China announced at the start of this year that 99% of the 22,000 taxis operating in the city were now electric. Last year, it still had 7,500 gas-powered taxis on the roads. A few can still be found, but electric ones far outnumber them in that high-tech city in China. And an official Chinese newspaper has warned Washington not to demand too much from Beijing as talks on ending their tariff war entered a second day with no word on possible progress. The Global Times, the Chinese newspaper, said this morning that the Trump administration is dealing with an increasingly strong China that has pressing needs. Newspaper said Washington cannot push China too far and must avoid a situation that spins out of control. And a top Syrian Kurdish official says his fighters are prepared to confront Turkish military forces if they enter northeastern Syria. The co-chair of the largest Kurdish group in Syria, the Democratic Union Party, says it's clear from Ankara's latest statements that Turkey has a plan to enter northeastern Syria. He says, we will be ready if that happens. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Let me read some of these emails that have come in. David writes, thanks for bringing Mr. Taranchuk on the show today. And I was wondering if Ed would advocate for some more road diets for major Tampa streets. I really like the road diet for Nebraska Avenue south of Hillsboro. Would like to see the bike lanes, bus pullovers also extended on Nebraska north of Hillsboro. Roads like Sly Avenue and Florida Avenue could use some diets too to slow traffic and make it safer for pedestrians. That's David's email. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And here's some more emails that have come in. Adam writes this: I encourage everyone not to watch Trump's speech tonight. If you do, make sure you have a fact-checking device nearby because it'll be full of lies and made-up information. We have come full circle. All the major networks will still air his speech in prime time, despite knowing it will be full of lies and used as propaganda. And Adam says that there's no crisis at the border. And these are just some of the emails that have come in the last few minutes. Chip in Tampa says, I sense that the Tampa's mayor race is going to come down to who is farthest to the left. That would be a bright spot on an otherwise dark political landscape in Florida and the U.S., writes Chip. That's his email. Thanks to Mary in Sarasota for making a contribution to WMNF this morning online at WMNF.org. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. You may have seen that video of the young woman who worked at the McDonald's in South St. Petersburg, a 20-year-old woman who was confronted by a 40-year-old guy who yanked her by the collar and yanked her across the counter, and she fought back. Her name is Yasmin James, and there's going to be a strike today at that McDonald's. In fact, right about now, this is the McDonald's on the south side of St. Petersburg. And Kofi Hunt is a union organizer. He's with a group called Fight for 15. And he was talking about why there's going to be a strike at that St. Petersburg McDonald's. He was speaking to WMNF's Midpoint program, Sean Canaan, yesterday.
The executive and the
We're asking people to come out about 10:45. The event will kick off about 11. We're doing this event to say that McDonald's employees deserve to work in a safe environment. Like Yasmin said, it wasn't like it was spontaneous, like it was an escalating situation. And the manager at the facility was right there. You can see him on the video that he was just standing maybe 3 feet behind her. Even McDonald's came out shortly after the incident and said that the manager did follow proper procedure. There's no reason that a young woman should have to be confronted by a belligerent customer, and no one is stepping up to address the person and de-escalate the situation, or to the very least protect the staff and call for police. There was no real retroactive. And then even when he did assault her, then everyone froze. It was like no one knew what to do. And that's a very human response, but McDonald's has a responsibility to its employees.
All right. Well, that's Kofi Hunt, who's with the group Fight for 15, talking about the strike that's going on at the McDonald's in St. Petersburg right now, where a 20-year-old cashier was grabbed and yanked across the counter by a man who was demanding a straw, a customer who was demanding a straw. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. There's an interesting story, too, by Craig Pittman in the Tampa Bay Times today about Carlos Baruff, who had been a one-time candidate for U.S. Senate here. Now, just to read the first few paragraphs of the story, the story is headlined Scott's Parting Gift to Baruff. And it says this: hidden among the more than 70 last-minute appointments by outgoing Governor Rick Scott, released at 6 p.m. on Friday night, was one unusual choice. Bradenton developer Carlos Baruff to serve on the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. A Republican stalwart who lost his 2016 bid to oust U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, Baruff is currently facing an ethics investigation complaint over how he helped one of his former development partners while serving as chairman of the Southwest Florida Water Management District. In addition, one of his development projects has been accused of illegally moving an eagle's nest, and Manatee County officials investigated his company, Medallion Homes, for ripping up a county-owned conservation area. And Glenn Compton of the environmental group Minnesota 88 tells the Tampa Bay Times, he's not necessarily my first choice for the Wildlife Commission. He doesn't have a stellar record on the environmental protection. Neither Baruff nor Scott, whose term as governor ended yesterday, responded to requests for comment. Also, Scott's office did not make available a copy of the application that Baruff filed for the post explaining why he was interested. State wildlife commissioners don't vote on development permits, but they do set policy for management of the state's wildlife. For instance, they regulate such matters as whether to allow another bear hunt or whether to permit anglers to catch and keep Goliath grouper. Wildlife Commission scientists led the research and tracking of everything from red-tide algae blooms to manatees to the population and breeding of the official state animal, the Florida panther. So that's our. Those are some of the topics we could talk about. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's see what's on your mind. So the president, according to all reports tonight, is going to declare a state of emergency, or is likely to declare a state of emergency on the southern border, and a push for the building of that border wall. There are about 2,000 miles of border between the U.S. and Mexico on the south, in California, and Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And already about one-third of that is covered by a border or fence or some sort of barrier for people getting in. The president has said over and over again that he wants a tall concrete wall. He's hedged back from that in the last few weeks, suggesting he might want steel slats instead. There are all sorts of problems about the wall. As we know, the Rio Grande River runs through part of the border. Some of the border is farmland. Some of the border is desert and really tough for anybody to navigate on foot. The president has already said that the border wall has started, but most news reports say that there were some upgrades to the border wall and some expansions of the border wall, but nothing really has taken place since President Trump came into office. But the question is, do you think that there is an emergency on the southern border? Do you think that that's something that that we should be alarmed about? Is there an emergency of people coming over those southern border? We've heard the Trump administration claim for the last few weeks that terrorists were getting over the border. The fact checkers saying that very few terrorists are getting over the southern border. People who are on a terrorist watch list, but not necessarily terrorists, have come through, but more of them have come through Canada than they have through the southern border. So this question about whether or not we have an emergency is a big one. Certainly, I think as somebody has already suggested, that whatever the president says should be fact-checked tonight. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. So what do you think? Is there an emergency on our southern border, something that you're alarmed about? 813-239-9663. Jan Simpson is our phone producer today, and we could talk about some of these other state and local issues and national and international issues that I brought up. Let's go to Gail in Crystal Beach. Hi, Gail. You're on. What are your thoughts about some of these news issues?
Well, this border wall, as Nancy Pelosi stated, is an atrocity. I just bought the Life magazine 70th edition of The Diary of Anne Frank, and the way they're describing what happened to the people interned by the Nazis is very similar to what's happening to the children and the people interned by the United States at this time. It's a shame that this fear-mongering is taking over our country, and it's got to stop.
Yeah, I mean, the kids aren't being deliberately killed, though. I think, comparisons with the Holocaust are always dangerous. But the kids are being held in, I saw a report yesterday, they're in tents.
Part of the news stated that they were in freezing cold cells after being brought there wet. No wonder people are dying. But they don't care. And they're shipping them all over the country, just like they did after Katrina, to the people affected there. It's just, this is not what our country is made of.
Yeah. All right. Gail, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think they are being held in harsh conditions. Let's go to Chris in Sarasota. Chris, you're on WMNF.
Hi.
Hi.
Morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk about Carlos Baru.
Okay.
You shouldn't have contractors or developers be in charge of the wetlands. Lombard Point. Up here in Manatee County, or down in Manatee County, up from me, where he's been fighting all the Cortez people, you know, for trying to do in the wetlands for all of his big thousands of home projects.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting that the new governor says he's going to be an environmental governor. The last governor also claimed that he was going to be an environmental governor. It didn't turn out to be that way, but, you know, that.
Yeah, I laugh at that.
Yeah, but what would you say Baruf's reputation is in the Manatee, Sarasota area when it comes to the environment? What do people there say when they say Carlos Baruf?
Most of them, I believe that I know from Sierra Club and the wetlands thing, don't like anything he's doing because of what he wants to do. Just kind of cut it all down and do what he wants.
You get the sense that Rick Scott has placed the fox in charge of the chicken coop?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Uh-huh.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. And let's go to James in St. Petersburg. Hi, James. You're on WMNF.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I'd like to talk about the Trump wall situation.
Sure.
Personally, I see it as, you know, on a personal level, I guess I see it as like Trump's Washington Monument or his Mount Rushmore, you know, trying to leave his legacy. After so many, you know, you look at documentaries and all that type of stuff to where you've seen, like, as an example, El Chapo and all the drug lords were tunneling through or using vehicles and decking them out as, like, border security vehicles to get all of their things across, people, drugs, all that stuff. And it, to me, it goes back to the adage, you know, to where the Republicans like to use the example, say, like in gun control, to where bad guys are going to get guns, they're going to use knives, they're going to use cars. It's the same thing. They're going to find a way to get in here, no matter if there's a wall or if there's not a wall. So to me, it just seems like, it, you know, it goes along with the hypocrisy of why don't we have a national emergency in regards to guns and things like that, to when, you know, we have somebody go in and shoot up a church or, you know, knock down 50 people at a concert in Las Vegas.
Yeah, the president did not declare a national emergency after Las Vegas, yet we know that those guns that were used in Las Vegas are everywhere. So
exactly.
why shouldn't we all be alarmed that those guns are everywhere?
Exactly. And again, you know, and just in regards to, like, even the latest one, you know, to where the police officer was killed. I mean, I have a brother that's a police officer. But again, they want to use an example as, you know, an illegal immigrant, you know, as one person doing this. But again, we have continuous over and over, you know, someone just going out and knocking down, you know, dozens of people for no particular reason. So where's our national emergency in that type of a situation?
Yeah, well, that's a really good point. When it's brown people, there's a national emergency. But when it's white police officers or anybody else, you know, gamblers in Las Vegas who are white, there's no emergency. It's a great point,
exactly.
James. Yeah,
you know, I'm Irish white Catholic. You know,
yeah. And there have been a lot of shootings, unfortunately, by Irish white Catholics.
Exactly.
James, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Chris has a different view of all this. He says, tune in tonight at 9 to see what real leadership looks like. That's Chris in Tampa's email. Chris, thank you for your thoughts. And let's go to Joshua in Clearwater. Hey, Joshua, we just have about 20 seconds.
20 seconds? Oh, hello. Thank you for everything you do. I just wanted to shout out, I'm a driver in the local area in Tampa Bay. And it's very dangerous driving out there with the distracted drivers and everything that's going on. And it's just an issue I feel like people don't talk about enough. So I just want to shout out and shout that out. And thank you.
All right. That is a good point. And it's interesting that all the Tampa mayoral candidates so far have talked about transportation. That's been the number one issue. But I think the crowded roads, the safety of driving, that is a big issue. And Joshua, you're right. We should talk more about it. And we will. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the NPR News. Right after that, your hero, Mark Bureau. Thanks to Jan Simpson, our phone producer today. This is WMN.